The Book Nook on WISO is made possible by five local library systems in Southwest Ohio: the Greene County Public Library, Washington Centerville Public Library, Clark County Public Library, the Dayton Metro Library, and the Wright Memorial Public Library.
Hello, welcome to the Book Nook on WISO. I'm Vic McCunis. And I'd like to welcome back to the program today Donald Ray Pollock. Hello, Don.
Hi, Vic.
Don, I've been waiting for your most recent novel, The Heavenly Table, to come out in paperback, and it finally did. This is my favorite novel from last year. I'm so delighted to be able to talk to you about it again.
Well, hey, I appreciate you thinking of it in that way.
Well, I do, and this is your second novel. We had John back in the day for your first book, a collection of stories called Knock 'em Stiff.
Mm-hmm.
And then we had you back on. Actually, I think this is the sixth time I've had you on. You've got three books, and I think we've double dipped on every one, Don, because I love your work so much.
It could be. It could be. But, I really appreciate you taking the time.
Well, it's my pleasure. The first novel was The Devil All the Time, and now this book, The Heavenly Table, which just came out in paperback, and I'm hoping maybe we can cover some new ground that we didn't cover in the last interview, but we do need to talk about these Jewett brothers. Why don't you set this up, Don? If you had to describe this novel, let's say you were in a bookstore and someone came up and you saw them looking at the paperback in the shelf there. And they didn't know who you were, and you wanted to go up to them and say, hey, I think you might enjoy this book. What would you tell them about it?
Boy, that's a tough question. I guess I would say, as far as a summary of the book, it's really there's two storylines for the most part. The Jewett brothers, who are down-and-out sharecroppers in Georgia, and they are fascinated with this crummy dime store novel about a bank robber in the Old West. And when their father dies, they decide they're going to use this book as sort of a manual on how to get out of their, dire circumstances. And so they proceed to head north and they become criminals. And then the other storyline is about a poor farmer and his wife in Ohio, and their son disappears, and they think that he has joined the army. This is set in 1917, and so they think he's joined the service and he's going off to war. And eventually, of course, the Jewetts and the farmer and his wife meet up. I don't know. There's a lot of characters. There's a lot of things happening. I began the book thinking that I was going to write a novel based on Camp Sherman, which was an army camp built in 1917 here near where I live in Chillicothe. And then the Jewett brothers popped up, and the more I worked with them, the more I decided that was the story I wanted to tell, the story about the brothers.
Now, Don, when you say that the Jewett brothers popped up, you talk about in your imagination, suddenly there they were?
Yeah. I had originally planned on, I was going to have the camp as the, that was going to be the primary setting in the book, and then I wanted to have all these different characters come in from different parts of the country, and then that was going to more or less be the novel. And so I started working with these three brothers who, I intended on sending to the army camp.
Oh.
And then then I changed everything.
I said, we're not going to that camp.
Yeah.
You can keep the camp, though.
Yeah.
And of course,
I kept the camp. I'd done so much work on that that I had to keep part of it anyway.
Uh-huh. And for those out there listening who aren't familiar with the history, World War One had been going on for a couple of years, but the United States had stayed out of it. And then when Woodrow Wilson was elected to a second term, he decided to let the United States enter the war. He had stayed out of it. And in 1917, this camp in Chillicothe would have been where American doughboys were training to go to Europe to fight.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And you've got a guy there at the camp who's one of your peripheral characters. I'm guessing maybe in your original thoughts, you were thinking about making Lieutenant Bovard a more of a major character?
Yes. Yeah. And you know, I mean, it's pretty much the way that I work. You know, I'll work on something maybe for quite a while, and then I decide to go off in a different direction. And so I end up losing a lot of pages, a lot of hours, a lot of work. But, you know, it's just, you know, you're sort of feeling your way towards the story. And I tossed out a lot of characters that I'd been working on, but I did keep Lieutenant Bovard.
And I remember talking to you about your first novel, The Devil All the Time, and making the transition from writing short stories to a novel was an arduous thing for you. You had these different storylines, and you're trying to figure out, well, how can I put these together?
Yeah. That's still going on. I'm still trying to, you know, figure out how to write a novel. But, you know, I enjoy doing it, you know, writing novels because I can, you know, I can expand and I can go off in different directions and stuff like that as long as I don't go too far out, you know, and bring it, you know, as long as I can bring it back to the main storylines. But it was hard for me to figure out. I think I'm probably, you know, well, when I started out, my intention was to learn how to write short stories. That's what I wanted to do.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, then, you know, the publisher, you know, wants a novel, and that makes sense because they're going to, you know, maybe make more money off of it. So so it's been a, you know, a long transition, I guess.
Donald Ray Pollock joins us on the telephone in Chillicothe, and we're talking about his novel, The Heavenly Table, which just came out in paperback. And you mentioned that dime store novel that these brothers Kane, Cobb, and Chimney just love, and only one of them can read, and he reads it to the other two. And the book is The Life and Times of Bloody Bill Bucket by Charles Foster Winthrop III. And this book almost becomes sort of a totemic object, doesn't it?
Yes. It's, you know, you have to figure that these brothers live such a miserable life, you know, and this was the only thing that they had that gave them enjoyment. So, you know, at night after they had worked in the fields all day, Kane would read, you know, them some pages from the book. And, you know, and they do this for several years. And it does become, you know, like a really important part of their lives.
Let's talk a little bit about Pearl, their father. He's only in the book at the very beginning, and he's a guy that's had a hard life.
Yes, he's had some bad luck.
I guess you could say that about a lot of these characters.
Yeah. Well, yeah. My stuff, it doesn't tend to go off in, you know, sunshine and rainbow directions or anything like that. Pearl has, you know, he was a farmer in the Carolinas. He had a wife and he had these three sons. And then his wife dies, a pretty pretty gruesome death. And he, you know, while he's caring for her, he's not taking care of the farm, and he ends up losing the farm. And then he and his boys wander through the South for the next 10 years trying to make it. And they finally end up on a major tar dwellers and as sharecroppers.
Mm-hmm.
And he, during this 10-year period, he becomes a sort of a, I guess you would call it a religious fanatic.
Mm-hmm.
And so the boys have to deal with that, too.
I have a lot of favorite moments in this book, but one of my all-time favorites, and I know I mentioned this to you in our prior conversation, was early in the book when Pearl has that encounter with this this mystic, and I'd like to read just a little short part of this here, just to give our listeners an idea of what you write and how you write. Is that okay?
Yeah, sure.
Okay.
Yeah.
"Mark my word," the man said. "You let them eat that cat, before long them boys will be wanting everything the easy way." Then he stepped down into the river and started to make his way across. At its deepest point, the water rose above his chest, and his beard suddenly popped up to float along in front of his face like a buoy. A mass of insects scurried to the top of the nest of whiskers to keep from drowning, and Pearl watched as the white bird swooped down from the tree and began plucking them off one by one and placing them on the hermit's outstretched tongue. Wow. That is amazing stuff, Don.
Well, thank you. Yeah, he's been following that bird around for 50 years.
Uh-huh.
they've become very close friends.
Uh-huh. Yeah, that's beautiful. Beautiful. And that's like a very uplifting part of the book, because some of it isn't quite so uplifting.
The hermit, actually, I mean, he gives Pearl, I guess, some hope,
uh-huh.
You know, at least for the afterlife.
Yeah.
And, you know, I try to stick in a something like that every once in a while because, my stuff is so dark and grim at times that, you know, I need to... I guess give the reader at least a little bit of relief, but yeah, I really enjoyed working with that hermit.
Oh yeah, and he just makes kind of a cameo. You have a lot of characters in this story, and let's talk about the brothers, and then maybe get into some of these more peripheral characters. A lot of them have big parts in the story, though. The brothers couldn't be more different. It's Cain, Cobb, and Chimney Jouett. It's hard to like Chimney early in the book. He's kind of mean, but we start to like him a lot. Tell us about these brothers and how they're different.
Well, of course, Cain is the oldest, and he's the considered probably the, you know, the smartest and the most capable. His mother is still alive when he's young, and she teaches him how to read. And he's also, he has the most, I guess you would call it common sense. And then Cobb is the next in line, and he's slow.
Mm.
He's big and strong, but very slow and very gentle. And then... Chimney is, he's the youngest, and he's a hothead, and he's can be violent.
Mm-hmm.
That's just the way that I didn't want them all to be the same or anything like that. And when I was working with them early, you know, and I was trying to figure out, well, you know, what are their personalities like and all, that's what I came up with, I'm glad that you began to like Chimney a little bit more as the book, you know, proceeded. But
well, I think when we have this eventual connection between the Fiddler family, or at least Ellsworth and Eula, and mm-hmm. the brothers. Chimney kind of shows a little different side of his personality.
Yeah. Yeah. I think part of the meanness and, everything came from just those terrible lives that they were, he was living as a kid.
Mm.
As they go out into the world and, encounter different things, maybe that's tempered at least a little bit, not a whole lot, but a little bit.
Mm.
And then when they get to the Fiddler's house, there is that, Eula as sort of that mother figure and all that. And I think that, sort of helps him some, maybe.
And the Fiddlers, they've had their own troubles. I had a relative. He died a number of years ago, but he was a very distinguished fella. He was a doctor. He was a radiologist. He grew up in a small town in rural Kentucky a long time ago, and they had outhouses. And the one thing that he retained as an adult was his amusement with outhouses. He loved outhouse humor. He loved outhouse jokes. And as I read your book, I always thought, Henry would have loved this story. You've got a lot of outhouse stuff in here, and you've got this character who I just love. His name is Jasper Cone. Tell us about him.
Well, Jasper is grew up not knowing his father. His mother is a very devout Catholic, and so he's sort of smothered by her, and then he eventually becomes through a sort of a almost a series of events, he becomes the sanitation inspector for the city of Mead, and that means going around and inspecting outhouses. You have to understand that now, and my name for Chillicothe is me. That's what I call it in mm-hmm. my fiction. In 1917, there were still about 1,800 outhouses inside the city. So I was thinking about that. I read this as part of my, just when I was reading up on that decade uh-huh. of the 20th century. And I was thinking, that would be a problem, because a lot of people had an outhouse and they had a water well in their backyard, and there was really no supervision.
Mm-hmm.
And so I just came up with this sanitation inspector, and he is fascinated with, modern indoor plumbing and on and on, all that kind of stuff. But his main job is to go around inspecting people's outhouses.
And he loves his job, but he really loves his job. Yeah, he really doesn't have any friends. He's kind of a depressive guy. He doesn't have a whole lot going on in his life. And
he's a very awkward person, I guess socializing and stuff like that. And he gains a lot of, self-respect
mm-hmm.
from this position that he's got, working for the city. And, even though it's sort of jokey, I intended it to be, as funny as I could make it.
Uh-huh.
But deep down, he's a very decent human being. Or at least I see him that way. And he befriends Cobb and, the slow one, and they become great friends, actually. And mm-hmm. And he ends up, in the end, being very pivotal in what happens to at least one of the Jewettes.
Uh-huh. And neither Jasper nor Cobb have ever really had a friend. So when they meet over a bag of donuts, and it's so sweet. When Cobb goes out with Jasper, and Jasper shows his love for the outhouse business and his expertise, and he'll say to Cobb, "Now you watch, this lady's going to come out, and she's going to go in there right now, and she's going to spend exactly this much time in there." And I mean, he's got it down to a science.
Yeah. Well, you can figure that he's probably been spying on some of these people.
Right.
At least a little bit.
Right. And I also need to mention, Don, just like in your first novel, we do have a serial killer. And
we do. And, yeah.
And he's a great character. He's hard to love, though.
Now, yeah. He's not one of my more likable characters, that's for sure. And, you know, and it was, you know, I've only had a couple characters that I have written about in those two novels that I just couldn't, you know, I just couldn't grow to like them at all.
Uh-huh.
And he's one of them. You know, the other one, you know, in The Devil All the Time, there was a preacher in there named Teagarden.
Mm-hmm.
And I could never get to like Teagarden.
He was horrible.
You know, and even though he didn't do, you know, he wasn't nearly as horrific as Carl and Sandy, I did grow to maybe not care for them so much as to feel a little bit of empathy for them.
Uh-huh.
Anyway, the serial killer in the Heavenly Table is one of those that I just couldn't really gain any sympathy for him.
He's a very troubled individual. And
yes.
Speaking of likable, though, you introduce a character whose name is George Milford, but everybody calls him Sugar. He's very likable. Mm-hmm. And he has an encounter with the serial killer. And we're very worried about this encounter. We're very concerned. And I'm not going to say anything more about it. But I love the way that you resolve that situation, because
yeah,
we're sitting there going, oh no, oh no, oh no.
Well, Sugar's had a lot of, well, he has complete bad luck throughout this whole book.
Yeah.
But I didn't want to turn out like that for him, so
yeah. Thank you.
Yeah, it was he was another one of the characters, you know, besides the brothers. He was probably my most, you know, my favorite character to write about in that book. I don't really know why, but I did enjoy putting him into bad spots.
Well, yeah, he's lovable, and he's got this hat he's so proud of. He loves,
yeah,
that hat.
Yeah.
And, well, we won't give away any more of that. The book is The Heavenly Table. Donald Ray Pollack wrote it. It just came out in paperback. And you got some great blurbs on this one. I like the one from the Wall Street Journal where they said, "A beach read to enjoy on the shore of a lake of fire."
Yeah. Yeah, they come up with some pretty good ones, don't they?
And the thing I loved about it is, even though it's so dark and so violent, it's really funny. It's hilarious. And is this your tribute to the Dime novel?
Well, yeah, part of it is that, and part of it is that I, you know, my second book, The Devil All the Time, was, there wasn't much humor in it, and it was pretty grim throughout, and I wanted to try to, well, I wanted to attempt to put as much humor as I could in this one, and, you know, it is a, you know, it's not for everybody. I mean, the humor.
Uh-huh.
And it's probably, a lot of it is, you know, the influences come from just my years at the paper mill and listening to the, you know, the guys at work.
Yeah.
You know, that type of humor. So, but I was, you know, I was trying to make it, you know, at least funny in parts.
Oh, you did. I just laughed and laughed and laughed. I read a lot late at night, and I had a hard time not waking up the person asleep next to me because I kept laughing.
Well, I'm glad to hear that.
Yeah. Donald Ray Pollack joins us. His book is The Heavenly Table. When I saw you at your event last summer when you rolled out the hardcover, you kind of surprised me, Don, because when you gave your talk, you mentioned the book that you're working on, and I was kind of surprised that you you talked about that. Do you want to talk about that some more? Is that something we can discuss?
Well, we can talk about the book I'm working on, but it's not the one I was working on then.
Okay. All right.
I gave it up temporarily anyway.
Okay.
And I've got, part of it, quite a bit of it's, in written. But we've had this thing going on in Chillicothe for quite a while with the opioid epidemic, and we had some women who turned up missing.
Right.
I don't know if you've heard about that or not. But
yes.
Yeah, they've done a couple documentaries about these missing women and all that. And I finally, I don't know why I took so long to make the decision, but I decided that I was going to try to use some of that as, for my next book.
Oh, my.
So I'm working on a novel that's pretty much about, the drug problem here in southern Ohio, and there's a serial killer. I want to be clear that it is a fictional,
right? Right. Well, it's not a funny subject either.
Yeah, it's not a funny subject, no. And the book's not going to have much humor in it. Believe me.
Well, I could tell there'd be a serial killer because I've read what's going on in Chillicothe, and there's speculation that there might be a serial killer operating there, but nobody knows because they haven't been able to solve this.
Right, and it's really hard to say what's happened, but. And I had always said that I would probably never write a novel, that takes place past, the advent of cell phones or whatever.
Mm.
But the more I thought about it, I figured, I better go ahead and jump on this while I'm still, able to go out and talk to people and, try to get a feel for it. So that's what I'm working on.
Well, I can certainly understand your reluctance to have all these modern gadgets in one of your books, but
I'm not real comfortable with the technology thing, but I thought that this was probably important enough for me to go ahead and do it. So I'm setting the book in 2016 and. We'll see what happens.
Yeah. I mean, you can always change your mind.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I do that a lot.
Yeah. Well, Don, it's always a real pleasure to talk to you about your work.
Vic, it's always a pleasure to talk to you, too, and I appreciate it so much, your support. It means a lot to me.
Well, I love your work, and I'll look forward to whatever the next book is.
Okay.
All right. Okay. You've been listening.
Thanks a lot.
You betcha. You've been listening to The Book Nook. My guest has been Donald Ray Pollack, just out in paperback, The Heavenly Table. For The Book Nook, I'm Vic McCunis.